Baker McKenzie welcomes you to TMT Talk, the global TMT podcast series, focusing on sector-specific issues that are impactful on players in the technology, media, and telecoms industry.
Welcome, everybody, to our episode of TMT Talk. My name is Teresa Michaud, and on behalf of the TMT Industry Group, I have invited my partners, Amy Greer and Jennifer Connors, to this episode to talk to us about the latest regulatory activity affecting tech, and specifically the new enforcement activity from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, including who will be a target and how companies should prepare. And for this reason, we've set out 10 key things that we think you all should know. So let me start first by asking both Amy and Jennifer to briefly introduce themselves to our audience.
Thank you so much, Teresa. It's nice to be with everyone today. My name is Jennifer Connors. I'm a partner in the North American Financial Regulatory and Enforcement Group. I'm located in New York. My practice focuses on traditional financial services firms as well as innovative fintech companies, including marketplace lenders, payments companies, and other players in the technology ecosystem.
Thanks so much, Teresa. My name is Amy Greer. I'm co-chair of the Baker North America Financial Regulation and Enforcement Practice. I am an enforcement lawyer by background, and I'm thrilled to be here today. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you, and welcome to both of you. So, Amy, let's kick it off with you. Could you just fill us in on what is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and what authority does it have?
Sure. So the CFPB was created as part of the Dodd-Frank Act in the wake of the financial crisis of 2008. It was founded in 2011, and its purpose is to enforce federal consumer financial protection laws, and also to protect consumers in the financial markets. What that means is actually defined pretty broadly. If it touches consumer finance across state lines, then the CFPB is likely to assert jurisdiction looking to protect consumers from unfair or deceptive practices. Pretty much every web-based company has a payments-related component for purchasing within an app, buying products or services, and then there are actual payment systems, fintech firms, that market their services to consumers. Those that permit consumers to pay one another, like splitting the cost of dinner, or those that permit consumers to pay for products and services over time. These are just some examples. You can probably think of many more. All of these are within the CFPB's jurisdiction. And that is why they are asserting this regulatory authority by seeking information from tech companies today.
Got it. And so why now? Why are we talking about this today? And what is the context for the latest investigation?
So I wouldn't go so far as to call this an investigation. Very often, regulators seek information through regulatory inquiries. And this is more an inquiry than an enforcement investigation. And, you know, I have to say, this is really the stuff of enforcement and regulatory lawyers, these fine lines. But I have to say, it always feels like a regulator is looking down the barrel of their very significant authority at you. So it's easy to feel like an enforcement action. But from the time of his confirmation, the CFPB director, Rohit Chopra, has expressed concerns over tech companies at a variety of levels. And this includes tech companies providing financial services to customers, and he also referred to the U.S. becoming, and I'm quoting him, a surveillance state as tech companies collect data from individuals and combine that information to understand and even predict consumers' decision making. And he is concerned not only about privacy, but also about abuse of that ability and more broadly about the ability of smaller firms to compete with sort of the larger tech companies and what the impact of the inability to compete might have on the capital markets more broadly.
Well, that seems like quite an extreme concern, but maybe Jen can fill us in on, you know, other than the companies that were specifically named in this first round, I mean, who else is going to be at the end of what you described as the barrel? Who are the players that might be at risk?
Thanks, Teresa. Sure. As Amy mentioned, the CFPB was created by the Dodd-Frank Act in 2010. And although from a supervisory perspective, it doesn't look at all institutions, it has broad jurisdiction over really any entities that are involved in consumer finance. And that involves a lot of fintech companies. So clearly, the technology companies that are in the specific request are in scope, but many, many other fintechs have already been the subject of CFPB actions in connection with the products and services that they offer. Some of the companies that come to mind without naming specifics are those involved in the payments ecosystem, non-bank lenders, any small dollar lending, mortgage services. Certainly the buy now, pay later is maybe an area that the CFPB could be looking at. So it's quite broad and something that companies are going to have to be mindful of as they develop their products and services going forward. And most of these come to the attention of the CFPB through customer complaints.
Got it. So it's quite a broad target list, I think. What about the information being sought from these companies? What do we know about the actual documents or communications that are being requested?
Well, the sample order was 17 pages long, just to give you an idea of the breadth of the request. And so obviously, I'm not going to cover all of it, but it sought information about the products being offered, whether intermediaries were involved with the products, what are the fees and costs, are there promotions involved, discounts, how much revenue is earned, how the products are sold, how companies measure consumer engagement. The CFPB also wants to know about data, obviously, based on Director Chopra's surveillance concerns. They want to know about data harvesting. How is data collected? What do companies do with it? How is it aggregated? Is data sold to third parties or is it shared? And is it used for product development? They also want to know about whether the companies undertake any kind of eligibility requirements to determine whether customers are actually eligible to utilize particularly lending products. And also they want to know whether or not companies undertake any sorts of consumer protection efforts and what those are, just by way of sort of broad scope.
Sure, exactly. I mean, you know, specifically, Amy, if you think about it, the CFPB has the remit to be able to enforce the financial regulations on all of these non-banking type of entities. So, you know, they're looking at issues like fair lending, like the Equal Credit Opportunity Act. So things that you mentioned, like, for example, the use of artificial intelligence in onboarding customers, they're going to be looking at that to see if it's discriminating in ways that are prohibited, for example, by these requirements.
I was just going to say, yeah, once the data is collected, but this is the stuff that that they're seeking in the first instance. And that's what I was getting to earlier, Teresa, when we were talking about you know, sort of the difference between a regulatory inquiry and an enforcement inquiry. I think that the CFPB is trying to get the lay of the land. They may capture some enforcement matters just by virtue of people that are in firms that are flat-footed. But I do think that they're evaluating what's going on out there.
Right. It certainly seems that way. And this evaluation is quite broad. Certainly the lay of the land for many of these companies is going to involve a lot of different internal processes and players. What can you tell us about how some of the companies who might receive requests from the CFPB should manage the request when it does ask for such broad information?
Well, I have to say, the first thing I would offer is that if you've not managed a fully regulatory inquiry before, that you should get help from someone who has experience doing that, because they are different. And I think the expectation is that you'll produce what you want to produce, or that you can sort of fudge it a bit, and really you just can't. These things should be centrally managed. You really need to think about where information resides. It should be thoughtful. It needs to be prompt. You need to manage the expectations of the regulator because you're not going to have everything at your fingertips. It's a process, and engaging with the regulator to ensure that they understand that you're doing your best to be responsive in a timely fashion. Generally, you can get extensions of time to respond as long as they know that you're making a good faith effort to be responsive. All of this depends on the nature of your business, the size of your business. How much of the material, you know, again, 17 pages, actually applies to your firm. And so it's very dependent on all of these things, but it does need to be managed. And again, a central location for the material to go out so that someone is watching what's coming, what's going out to the regulator to ensure that it's going out and being identified as we've responded to request number 6, for example, that kind of thing. It needs to be really thought through in a meaningful and organized way.
So in terms of organizing, if we're talking about, you know, in-house counsel who may be the one tapped to be the centralized manager of this inquiry, where should they look for responsive information? Because it seems like what we're talking about actually might live in a lot of different places within the corporate structure.
Sure. Well, I think, you know, Teresa, as Amy mentioned, it's just imperative that firms track the information that they are producing, what they are going to object to, and the rationales, for example, with respect to privilege, et cetera. That's obviously critical. It would certainly be prudent to set up some form of a data room and to internally set up some type of a team that is responsible for producing the data. It's probably going to draw upon representatives, I would think, from your technology and product groups, because likely there will be information with regard to the development and the rollout of the products that are offered. It's going to involve your consumer-facing groups, so your sales groups, et cetera. It's probably going to involve your marketing teams, because you'll have to produce data related to the way that the products are promoted, et cetera, and probably information with regard to internal meetings and internal communications with regard to the approval and consideration process associated with the products, obviously excluding anything that might be a privileged communication with counsel. But it definitely takes a discipline to manage all of that and to manage the groups accordingly and to make sure that they have accountability and they're providing the information on a set basis. Because as Amy said, you want to be in touch with the regulator to let them know where you are in the production process. Obviously, they will give you more time and they will work with you, but you want to make sure that you keep them informed.
Great. I think that is very helpful and clear direction. You touched on one topic that I'd like to turn to next, and it's really, you know, as we said at the beginning, there are 10 key things. I think this is two key things. One is, you know, what has to be produced? You mentioned, Jen, you know, privileged materials might be exempt. So the questions together are, what must companies produce, but also what can companies withhold?
Well, you know, it's a lot of information. Don't panic. I mean, not everything will be relevant for every company, and not every company will have responsive data for every request. But responsive information will need to be produced. And this is really not a time to get cute or crafty about it. In terms of what can be withheld, as we've discussed, attorney-client privilege is available to consider, you know, if it actually applies. I will say, in my rather considerable experience, both on the regulator side and on the defense side, privilege can be overused. And when it's overused, it's a problem. And so I would say, if it's truly privileged, withhold it. It's available to you. But consider what its limits are, because very often some of those documents are actually, number one, not really privileged. And often those same documents will turn out to be quite helpful to you. And also, the Freedom of Information Act is your friend here. Right, Teresa?
Right. As a litigator by trade, certainly one of the concerns is overproduction. So I understand there's certainly a balance between not wanting to withhold everything that may be helpful on the one hand, but on the other hand, wouldn't documents from the CFPB actually be subject to FOIA requests where, you know, potentially other third parties who have an interest, whether that be the media or whether that be opponents in litigation or even competitors in the marketplace, don't they have the right under FOIA to then seek copies of whatever the CFPB may have?
Well, and the answer to that is not if you protect it properly. And like most regulators, there are FOIA provisions applicable to the CFPB. And if you follow the FOIA requirements, you can protect from a Freedom of Information Act request the documents that you provide to the CFPB pursuant to a regulatory inquiry. And based on recent Supreme Court precedent, the breadth of that protection is actually very broad. And so your trade secrets, your business confidential materials will all be subject to protection from Freedom of Information Act requests if, in fact, you mark the documents as seeking FOIA protection and you request FOIA protection upon production. But again, this goes back to the, if you've not responded to a regulatory inquiry before, maybe it's time to seek help from someone who has.
Right. It sounds like all of this advanced planning and having a real knowledge about how to respond is going to be very important, because these things can really impact different areas of the business. I mean, the first thing that I mentioned is, you know, just from my perspective, pending or threatened litigation certainly could be affected by having documents released publicly. And not through the normal channels of discovery as we would consider under the federal rules or state rules of procedure. But what other areas of the business might be impacted by how a company responds to these inquiries from the CFPB?
Sure. I think that just in terms of any sort of partnerships that might be on the horizon with other fintech companies or other service providers, any new products that are being considered, upcoming deals, et cetera, you know, those are all likely to be impacted in some fashion. Certainly, if there's some type of an M&A transaction that's imminent, one of the key areas that any prospective buyer is going to be asking is with regard to any regulatory inquiries and understanding exactly where the firm is in that process and what potential exposure or liability they might have. There's no reason to think that just by virtue of receiving an inquiry like this, that there is necessarily liability afoot. Certainly, as Amy mentioned, this may very well be more educational in nature for the CFPB. But to the extent that there are any types of customer complaints or other information, that's all information that is going to need to be provided to a counterparty. So inquiries like this certainly will matter, and the manner in which the company deals with them will matter. I don't know if it would have a day-to-day impact on business as usual, but in terms of thinking through new products and services, it may be very helpful then at that point for some of the product teams to ensure that they're consulting with the internal legal teams or whomever is managing the whole process to ensure that they're not potentially exacerbating an issue if it appears that the CFPB is focusing on a particular product or service.
Great. Thank you, Jennifer. I see we're coming close to the end of our time together, I'm wondering if each of you might be able to give me one or two more action items for companies that they can use to prepare for CFPB regulation, even if they never get one of these inquiries directly.
Sure. This is probably the most common advice that we offer companies, which is to document what you do. Consider what this request is looking at and asking for, and determine whether you have existing policies and procedures that are documented around these issues. And if you don't, consider whether you should, because if you are not a recipient of this inquiry, it's certainly possible that you may be a recipient later on, or as Jen pointed out, customer complaint may come up later, and it will be helpful to you to have policies and procedures or documentation around your process for how to manage a particular issue that you know CFPB has an interest in at some point later down the road.
Absolutely agree with that, Amy. I think that it, again, is just critical that you have either a designated person or a team that is responsible for receiving these inquiries and for managing them on an end-to-end basis. It may even be prudent to handle this similar to a litigation, for example, where there's a notification of a litigation hold, if you will, on data and information that's going to be responsive to this request, so that you can ensure that that information is available and you can gather it in an organized fashion to be able to produce to the regulators. But absolutely, documentation and a process in place, I think, is critical, because you can certainly show your good faith in that manner.
Excellent. That is extremely helpful, I think, and is applicable to anyone who maybe doesn't consider themselves, you know, a direct target of this first wave of inquiries from the CFPB, but certainly is something that every company can put into practice now in order to prepare for what may be coming, obviously, once the CFPB does get the lay of the land. So with that, Amy and Jennifer, I want to thank you both so much for taking the time today to fill us in and to join the podcast. And I hope for those listening that you enjoyed today's session and that you will join us on future TMT Talks. Thank you very much.